Odyssey celebrates Labor Day. Brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best mobile network according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data 1H 2026.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Hey, all, going to keep it short and sweet on this episode number 22 of the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. Had the pleasure of meeting my next guest at a Bills game a couple of years ago down on the sidelines before the game. And we just started talking. I had no idea who he was. He knew who I was. I asked who he was. And when he told me, I'm like, are you kidding me? His name is PJ Pelletieri, and he is the assistant hitting coach for the New York Yankees. And yes, a huge Bills fan. We get into how he became a Bills fan, where he grew up, why he's a fan, also his transition from playing baseball into coaching, and now the Yankees, the situation we're all in, and how he's trying to keep everything going on his end as far as being a coach and what they're doing with their coaching staff and their players. And of course, we talk a little bit about the 2020 Buffalo Bills and the offseason. So here is my next guest, PJ Pelletieri, assistant hitting coach for the New York Yankees. Thanks for tuning in to the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. Wherever it is that you pod, don't forget to download, subscribe, please subscribe, and throw me a nice review on iTunes, will you? PJ, thanks for joining me. You and I have struck up a friendship and a relationship now going back a couple of years, and I just really admire what you do. And I don't think a lot of Bills fans realize that there's a Yankees coach that is a big Bills fan, and it's pretty cool to have somebody from another sport rooting for their team. So thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure, Sal. The Bills are a big part of my life, and I'm excited to talk about it with you and some Yankees baseball.
All right. Yeah, let's do that. So I want to talk about your life, first of all, and just how you became a Bills fan. But let's rewind even before that. Just tell me about growing up. Where did you grow up? And how much was baseball a part of your life as a kid? And when did it become much more serious for you?
So I was born and raised in Southern California. My parents are originally from Rochester, and they moved to California right before I was born. So I'm being born and raised up there in the heat and the sun, and I just got into baseball at a very young age. I was 4 years old, grew up watching the Dodgers. Mike Socha was my favorite player, so I couldn't wait to be a catcher and just throw the gear on, and I loved it. From the first time I put it on, I loved it. And from then, it just stemmed. I played year-round, through high school, and then I got a chance to play it in college at Cal State Fullerton, which is in Orange County. Pretty good baseball program there. Very fortunate to be there. We wound up winning a national championship there in 2004.
Wow.
Fortunately, got drafted by the Yankees in the 13th round. Started my playing career with them. Played 9 years throughout the minor leagues. Made it as high as AAA for 3 years. And then retired. I guess it's hard to say retired at the age of 29. Wasn't good enough to play anymore, I should say. And then I started coaching immediately. Got into coaching the very next year in 2012, rookie level with the Yankees down in Florida. And then each year I was fortunate enough to get promoted from low A to high A to double A to triple A. And in 2018, it all culminated with a chance to be a part of the major league staff of the New York Yankees.
So your parents are from Rochester originally. I'm assuming that's how you became a Bills fan. Were they big Bills fans? Did they influence you in that regard?
Of course. My dad, growing up in Rochester, used to take the drive with all of his buddies in the old Winnebagos and buses down to the old rock pile. And he was a huge Jack Kemp fan. And growing up, like, once you know how it is, Sal, having your son who's into sports, it's like, yep, you start to get to a certain age where you're starting to really understand it a little bit more. And it just so happened for me that was, you know, the Bills Super Bowl run. I was 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And I'll never forget the first run, though, for the Bills. I was kind of a little bit of a Raiders fan because they were in L.A. at the time. And Bo Jackson was playing for the Raiders. And it's like, man, this guy was the most athletic freak you've ever seen in your life. And he played baseball. So it was, man, Bo Jackson was my guy. And my dad, I'll never forget, like, asking me, I'm a 10-year-old kid, PJ, who are you going to root for today? And this was the AFC Championship game, the Raiders and the Bills. And I told him, I said, whoever wins this game, I'm a fan for life. And obviously the Bills did what they did and absolutely stomped them 51-3. And to be honest, Sal, from then on, I've been absolutely crazy obsessed about the Bills and taking a lot of heat for it, a lot of flack for it over the years, as many of the, you know, Bills fans and Bills Mafia have over the years. But I don't know. I feel like they're a part of my DNA, and I'm not letting it go at any time soon, if you know what I mean?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. That had to be cool for your dad, though. I mean, you're like, hey, whoever wins this game, he wants them to win because he wants them to win. He also wants his son to be a Bills fan and all that, so that's got to be cool.
Yeah, I think it worked out good for him at the time, especially on the run that the Bills were on. But I think through the early 2000s and through the drought, he probably asked himself a few times, like, what have I done to myself? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I'm like obsessed. Like, unless we're playing during the season, obviously now, I try to not miss a single snap of every game, rewatch the games, listen to all you guys on WGR do your thing, post-game, pre-game, leading up all week. I mean, I'm obsessed. And I think it was pretty sweet. Sorry to jump all over the place.
No, go ahead.
I think it was pretty sweet. Because throughout the drought, I'm thinking, like, man, it would be really neat to be able to finally get to the playoffs again, me as an adult, and watch the game with my dad. Like, so many stories of people in Buffalo with their family. I mean, the Bills are such a family thing and a family event. And I always thought about that. And once they broke the drought and me and my dad were able to watch the game actually in Buffalo at 716 together, whether we scored 3 points or lost or what, it was like one of the best days, one of the best afternoons that we had. So it was great.
That's awesome. So you watched the playoff game there? That's where you were when you watched it?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty
cool. Yeah, like I said, we jump around so much. I mean, the baseball career and baseball lifestyle is, I mean, it will take you everywhere across the country, and it's really hard to really have a home base and have a permanent home. So we happened to move to Buffalo in the fall of 2016, myself and my wife, and my parents actually went full circle and moved back to Rochester in 2017, in April of 2017. And we happened to be living in Buffalo at the time when the playoff drought was snapped. I'd like to think maybe they were just waiting for me to move back to Buffalo to snap the drought. So, yeah, we actually, as soon as they clinched on New Year's Eve, I was making a reservation at 716. Had dad drive in, did mom and dad drive in from Rochester. I mean, what a scene it was. I mean, I know your scene was obviously better on the sidelines in Jacksonville, but it was a scene, man. Just packed. Everybody just so, so thrilled to have that monkey off their back. I'll never forget it. I mean, yeah. It was epic.
And I can attest, by the way, you and I, every once in a while, I never want to bother you because you're in season, but there might be a Sunday where we're in another city like Cleveland, and I'll shoot you a text and like, hey, man, game's about to begin. Let's get after this, you know, and it's cool because I know that you're paying attention to what's going on. But you got to balance that with baseball as well. And, you know, how much of the rigors of baseball, you know, really prevent you from paying attention to what's going on during football season? Do you just have to carve out some time at night just to go, you know, search highlights and things like that? Because baseball, man, that's a full day. It's a full day for a baseball game.
It is. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize how long of a day it is, especially the major league level. Like, for example, on any given home night game, let's call it, at Yankee Stadium, as a coach especially, it's probably a little bit longer for the coaches than it is for the players, and rightfully so, just because we're doing a lot more prep for upcoming teams or maybe teams that we're playing in a few days or what have you. We'll probably arrive at the stadium, myself and the other coaches, around 11 a.m., and you know a Major League Baseball game can be really long sometimes, especially if we're playing Boston or somebody. And, I mean, it might not end till 11. By the time we wind down and get out of there, it might be midnight. So it's long days. I mean, I'm not complaining about it by any means. I mean, it seems like it flies. I mean, I absolutely love what I do, and I'm very blessed to be able to do it. But they're very long days. So in regards to your question about carving out some Bills time, I think the only little time I can find on Sundays is because we usually play day games on Sundays too. So,
yep.
And it might be a travel day, meaning we're getting on the bus to go to the airport or getting on a plane to fly somewhere where I'll be able to kind of maybe pull up the post game on the radio app or get on the BuffaloBills.com and watch some highlights or the new thing, get the game pass and just start rewatching the game, which is tremendous, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It's a great chance to do that. And I'll tell you, even when I'm on the sidelines, if it is still in September, it's a Sunday, I'll be sneaking in some Yankee scores that I can look at too. So I make sure I follow that along as well. So we're all in the same boat. What about other guys in baseball? Are they hardcore football fans or fans of other teams? Are there any other Bills fans even on the Yankees?
There's no other Bills fans. One of our guys that runs our food room, he's a Bills fan actually, so we kind of talk here and there. But players-wise, I mean, throughout the league, and I mean, baseball, they love the NFL. I mean, big fantasy guys, but a lot of diehard guys too. And it's really neat because baseball is already a melting pot as far as cultures throughout the world. Mm-hmm. But also within the United States, I mean, guys are coming from all over the place. So you might have, you know, fans of 20 different teams alone in your clubhouse. We got one guy, for the Yankee fans out there who follow, Tommy Canley, one of our relief pitchers, one of our, you know, really good season last year. Just imagine like the diehard Bills fan, like Bills Mafia through and through, but for the Eagles. I mean, this guy, Eagles fan, like you wouldn't believe. I mean, travels with 5-6 Philly Eagles jerseys in his locker, even when we're going on the road.
Or that's awesome.
Always bringing the Philly helmet with him wherever he goes. And it's great. It's pretty neat to see his enthusiasm for it. Buffalo people might like to hear that he's a Sabres fan too. So that's
nice.
So that might make them take some interest in Tommy Canley's career. But
are you a Sabres fan?
A lot of, unfortunately, I don't want to make a lot of people mad, but I'm not. I didn't really get into hockey until around 2010. Just growing up in California, like there was so much to do that hockey, even though we had the Ducks and the Kings, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't, you know, there were so many other things to do. I was more worried about football or baseball or going to the beach or doing something else. But just from going to spring training in Tampa for the last, oh man, how many years has it been now? 16 years. Me and a couple of my former teammates were like, hey, we should go check out a hockey game. We go check out the Lightning. And they weren't very good. It was 2010. And we loved it. We fell in love with the game, fell in love with the sport. And since I've kind of adopted the Lightning, I've been pretty locked in to hockey. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm like the smartest hockey guy in the world.
Right.
But I love watching the Lightning play. And the fact that, you know, that season's on pause right now is killing me too. So.
Now, we will forgive you about that one. PJ Pillitteri joining me. Mm-hmm. He is assistant coach for the Yankees. What's your official title?
I am the assistant hitting coach.
Assistant hitting coach. Okay. I want to talk about, you know, the Yankees in a minute, but real quick on your personal life, you did just get married recently, I believe, right? Shannon. And is Shannon from Buffalo as well?
No, that's, we did just get married in November, and no, she's not. She's also from Southern California.
Okay.
So,
okay. I know when I met her though, I met her though on the sidelines and she was all into the Bills with you. That's for sure.
Oh, I mean, she is tremendous. She's completely adopted the Bills. I even warned her when we first started dating. She said, I'd like to be a Bills fan with you and watch the games. I said, are you sure? I said, I'm going to let you know, like, it's not easy. There's going to be some heartbreak involved. And she said, I don't have a team. I'm all in. And so much so the first year we dated, we actually flew back to Buffalo from California to watch a game. And it was like the typical drought game. Like it's December raining. The Bills are out of it. They're playing the Cowboys. And she absolutely fell in love with it. Like the tailgate, Bills Mafia, being in the stadium. She loved every second of it. And she was all in. So that obviously was nice. But no, she's, for what I do for a living, moving around and such the instability of being place to place, it takes a really special woman to be able to understand that. And I'm sure you know as well, Sal, like what you do, you're traveling so much. It takes a really special woman. And I'm very blessed to have a very special wife who gets it. And I think because she's a former athlete herself, she kind of understands what it's all about. You know what I mean?
What did she play?
She was a softball player at LSU.
Oh, wow. Oh yeah, that's high level athlete right there, man. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's much better athlete than I ever was, to be honest.
And I may have misspoke. How long have you been married?
We just got married this past November.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay,
November 9th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you know. Also, by the way, Reed Ferguson, the long snapper of the Bills, he is a huge Yankees fan.
Really?
Oh yeah, Reed and I, we talk Yankees all the time in the locker room. So I'll have to hook you up with Reed for sure. But he is a huge, huge Yankees fan. So let's talk about the Yankees. I want to ask you, what was it like the first time you were ever on a field when Aaron Judge was hitting a baseball?
It's pretty a good question, Sal. First of all, the first time I ever saw him is when we first drafted him in 2013. And I actually saw him at the minor league complex. And I mean, you read the reports, you see the video of how big and tall and strong this guy is, and then you meet him and you see him in person and you're like, oh my god, like this guy is the biggest baseball player I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Watching Aaron Judge hit a baseball is something unlike, I don't know, it's I don't want to call it once in a lifetime, but it's just not normal. It's very special, like with the ease with which this guy produces power and generates bat speed and is able to hit balls further than majority of players in the world. It's special. And I'm very fortunate to be at, like, to have had a front row seat to a lot of his development through the minor leagues. I coached him in A ball and Double A, and then now getting to be around him a lot more in the major leagues. It's been a treat. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but he's a special talent, and for as talented and as big as he is physically, this guy is the real deal mentally. He's a genuine, amazing person, and what you see from Aaron Judge in the public eye is not phony. He's the best in the business.
And obviously a little bit different of a player, but still tremendous young player, Gleyber Torres. You guys get him, you know, in a trade a few years ago, but what's it been like watching his development as well, especially at such a young age?
Amazing. This guy has instincts like you just can't teach. Like there are certain things like you see in all sports that guys are natural and guys are instinctual. They just see the game differently. And it's so hard to, or it's so easy to forget that this kid just turned 23 years old and he's already got almost 70 homers in the big leagues and hasn't really struggled offensively yet at the major league level. And I mean, it's a testament to him. Like, he's a student of the game. He's got amazing recall on pitchers that he's faced and how teams try to attack him. And he's a really instinctual player that we feel like as an organization is just even scratching the surface of what he can be. And we know we're setting the goals of him being a star player really high.
What's it like coaching under and with Aaron Boone?
Amazing. Booney is a people person. He's the same guy every single day. He's enthusiastic. He's got a lot of energy. He loves being around his coaches and his players. Obviously, he's his baseball family with his brother, his father, his grandfather. Baseball runs through his veins and it's in his blood. And having the chance to be on his staff now for the third year, it's been awesome. He's a great communicator. He's always looking to take care of his players and his coaches, and I think he handles the New York market, which can be really tough. He handles it with ease, and really fortunate to be on his coaching staff.
Tell me the day in the life of a hitting coach. Like, what do you do? How do you translate, coaching to the players when the game is over, the pregame batting practice, all that kind of stuff? Like, what goes into your job?
A lot. Like I said, we'll get to the ballpark at 11, and usually around 11, if not earlier, we're myself and the hitting coach, Marcus Timms, will be diving into video on the pitcher or pitching staff that we're facing that night. Once we get through that, make some notes. Once we get through that, now we start diving into video of maybe the game from the night before and break down some of the swings of our guys that they took in the previous game. And that'll get us to around 1 o'clock. And around that time, we head down to our batting tunnels where we got two down by the dugout at Yankee Stadium. We'll start having, our guys trickling through the cage, getting their routine stuff in. That'll take a few hours. We're usually stretching. We usually stretch the guys at four. They take batting practice on the field. Head out there and do the whole three rounds of BP or three groups of BP on the field. That takes about an hour. So now we're about 5:30. We get inside. We meet with the entire position player group. We show them a video of the pitcher that we're going to be facing that night, some tendencies, some approaches that we think as a team would be successful or would give us a chance to have success against the guy we're facing that night. And then after that, let's grab a quick bite. Mm-hmm. 6 o'clock, head back downstairs to the cage, get the guys some more swings before they kick it off at 7:07.
By the way, real quick story. My only trip ever to the old Yankee Stadium, I shouldn't say that, my first trip ever, I did go twice, my first trip ever was during the Subway Series when Roger Clemens threw the bat at Mike Piazza. That was the only game I'd ever been to, man, until then, because my college roommate actually is the video scouting director for the Mets, and he happened to be rising up through the ranks at the time, and we were at a wedding, and he said, "Do you want to go to the game?"
Right, what a game to go to. I was torn. Like, growing up as a kid, I was like, being a Dodger fan, like I said, Mike Socha, like Mike Piazza was my guy. And being in LA, like at the time, like, there wasn't much love lost for the Yankees, but man, I was like, what's going on? What a crazy game to be at, Sal.
It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And obviously, for me, I'd never been to Yankee Stadium, and here's my chance. I go to the Subway Series, and then that happens, which was really cool. You obviously experienced a lot of highs and some lows. Very disappointing. You know, when you get to the pinnacle and you can't bring home a championship, that we know that. Well, I've, you know, been there as a fan in multiple sports. Tell me a little bit about, you know, experiencing all that with the people you have in that organization, and going back to what I said about, you know, the organization itself, the Yankees. They're just maybe regarded as the greatest, you know, known organization in all of North American sports.
Yeah, I mean, when you walk through the doors as a player, coach, and a support staff, anything, you walk through the doors, the expectation is winning. Mm-hmm. And not just winning, it's winning at a high level. And the expectation is a championship every single year. And the Steinbrenner family does an absolutely amazing job of giving the organization and giving the Major League Club every opportunity to do that, be it accommodations, be it facilities, be it travel. They want our focus to be on playing the game and winning and bringing home another championship and bringing home number 28 is where we're at right now. We can't thank them enough for the opportunity that they give us to go out there to coach or play or, train the guys in the weight room. The opportunities that they give us and the resources that they give us are top notch. And I think that is a big major reason of why we have the success and the tradition that we do. And it's a really, really special place to work.
You know,
and there's a lot of responsibility that comes with being a Yankee.
Yeah, and on that note, when I was in Florida, when I was living down there and I was a teacher and coaching high school football, a friend of mine was one of the grounds crew for the Port Charlotte Stadium. At the time, it was the Rangers. You know, now it's the Rays, obviously, in Port Charlotte. And he said something that really stuck with me at the time. He said, after games, you know, we have to clean the dugouts and stuff. And this is going back to the early 2000s. He said, the only team that cleans up after themselves is the Yankees. And I'm not kidding. He said that. He goes, they actually do their own. They make sure the dugout looks good before they head out. He said, we have to go in there. We have to clean up after everybody. And it always struck me that it was important to an organization that they even did something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I can remember myself being a minor league player in minor league spring training. And we'd go to opposing, complexes, be it the Blue Jays or Phillies or Pirates. And it was always a thing, like, we're cleaning the dugout before we leave. Like, do not leave trash. Like, we were all about presenting ourselves with class and being respectful to our opponents and being respectful to, stadiums or fields or anywhere that we traveled with the Yankee logo on our chest or on our head. We are representing the organization at all times, and that is something that was really important. I think once you buy into that, too, with the – the shave rules and the way you need to wear your uniform, it gives you a sense of discipline. And if you can buy into that and make that a part of your, everyday routines, I mean, that just becomes a part of your DNA. And once it becomes part of your DNA, it's just, there's a right way to do things. And it's never a question once you buy into that.
You mentioned, playing across the country. You've played across the world now. What was it like playing in London?
Really cool, really great, really cool experience. Long flight, but really neat experience. I mean, especially to be one of the first teams to play over there. It was really neat. It went by so fast, though, Sal. Like, we traveled all the way there. We got one day off. We played two games, and we flew right back. So we didn't get a chance to see a lot of stuff. We saw the London Tower. We had, like, a dinner event in the London Tower, which was nice. Got to walk around the city a little bit. But most of the time I was spent at the stadium and tried to treat it as normal as it could be. But, I mean, an amazing 2 days. I think the games felt like they were 12 hours apiece because, I don't know, I think there was maybe 70 runs scored between both teams in 2 days. I mean, it was the stadium was where they had the Olympics, like the track and field events, mm-hmm. Is where we played. And the way the stadium was built, it was built to not have airflow come through, even though it's an open air stadium, so they can have a chance for world records on the track and you don't lose the integrity of that kind of thing, So that's how it was built. And well, it wasn't built for baseball because, sliders were not breaking and, it just felt like it was a launching pad, but it was fun to be a hitting coach. I'll tell you that much. Our guys were having a good time and loving the ballpark, but, what a great experience. The fans were awesome. The place was packed. it was a really, really cool environment. And obviously to have the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox there, I mean, it was pretty special event, something I'll remember for a long time.
Yeah, you know, the Bills played there in 2015, obviously against the Jags. I was there for that, and it was pretty interesting and unique, that's for sure. The game didn't wind up as good as we wanted. That was the E.J. Manuel game early on, all those turnovers, and then they came back, and then the phantom pass interference. But, you know, just going over there and experiencing that, I know they will at some point again. I don't think it's going to be this year. Who knows? And I liked it, although it was definitely a different feel in the stadium. Like, you didn't have all Bills fans. You didn't have all Jags fans. It was like everybody a potpourri of fans, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it was there as well. But it's still like, I think when you're in it and you're down the field and in the dugout, I mean, it could be a little weird at first.
Right.
But once the game starts, you're just kind of locked into playing. I mean, at worst case, it could be like a road game. I mean, there are worse environments to play. Like when we travel to Boston, I mean, it's a very, very intimidating and unfriendly place for the New York Yankees to go play. Let's just put it that way. But I mean, it was a different experience, but such a big stadium that there were so many fans that I don't think you really noticed the split just because there were so many that there was still a lot of noise in there.
Yeah, I can imagine. PJ Pelletieri joining me. He is the assistant hitting coach for the New York Yankees. Also a big Buffalo Bills fan. So I have this, you know, you and I were recording this on Friday morning. I have to do this draft with Mike Shope and the Bulldog on Friday afternoon where we're going to draft our all-time Bills team. So there's four people involved. So, you know, I'm guessing, and it's only going to be offense, by the way. So I'm guessing Jim Kelly will go first. If that happens, and if I get the second pick, who should I pick second? Only offense. If Jim Kelly goes first, who should I pick?
If Jim Kelly goes first, you probably don't want to go QB next.
Right. Thurman, Andre.
That's such a hard. I would probably go. I mean, I know
OJ.
Today's day and age are running backs, but it's just offense.
Just offense, all-time Bills team. We got to create the all-time best team we can as far as Buffalo Bills career players. So I'm thinking it's got to be Thurman, Andre, O.J. Simpson, Cookie Gilchrist.
I think you got to go Thurman, man. I mean, Thurman, in today's day and age, it's Christian McCaffrey.
Right,
I mean, it's
that's right.
I mean, he started the receiving out of the backfield, the all-purpose yards. I mean, Thurman was such a beast, man. He was so fun to watch, and he was so good. I mean, he's... Thurman in today's game would be awesome still with his skill set. It's just, I mean, I think he could have played in any era.
No, I agree. Well, that brings us to this year's Buffalo Bills. Obviously, we don't know what's going to go on, and I do want to touch on baseball and what you're doing with everything going on right now a minute, but we don't know what's going to happen with the season, but as we sit here right now, if we anticipate there is going to be a season, how excited are you to have Stephon Diggs? What do you think he does for this offense?
Oh, super pumped to have Diggs on the club. I mean, I think it really makes that receiver group really formidable. Obviously, Brown and Beasley were amazing last year. I think it frees them up to be even better. Diggs is special. I haven't stopped watching highlight tape since we traded for him, and I think he's going to do a lot to help Josh. I think he's going to do a lot to free up a lot of guys on that offense, and I can't wait to watch him. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be fun. What about where the roster is and what you think they should do next week once they're on the clock, assuming they do not jump back in the first round? They shouldn't pick number 54 on Friday night. I know Brandon Bean's going to take best available player. We know that. But is there any area you'd like to see them maybe try to add a little bit of depth?
To be honest with you, at this point, I have so much trust in Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, and the roster that they've built is mm-hmm. so strong. That, like we were talking earlier today, Sal, like there's just not really any holes anywhere that if they go best player available, whoever they take, I'm completely
yep.
convinced that he's going to help the roster, be it depth or be it, you know, a starter, even though there's not many starting positions available on this club right now. But I have so much faith in what they've done, and they've done everything the right way. I mean, how could you not? So whoever we take, I'm sure is going to be a heck of a football player, and can't wait to watch him fit into this team.
I want to tap into your skills as someone who watches players develop and ask you about Josh Allen and kind of think about yourself as a coach. I know it's a different sport, but you know, what could you tell Bills fans about where Josh Allen came into this league, where you've seen him go and where he can go based on your experiences watching people do this in baseball?
So from a development standpoint, I mean, the physical tools jump off the page when you watch this guy. I mean, they just jump. I mean, they scream at you. And to compare it to like a baseball, like when we draft guys or we sign guys internationally and they walk into the cage or they walk into the, you know, to the ballpark and they can do things that you don't see every single day, that's different. Those guys don't walk in the building every single day or every single year. And I compare that to let's, you know, like a guy that comes in like Josh is like we would say in baseball is tooled up. Like he can hit for power. He can run. He can throw. He can put the ball in play. He can play defense like a 5-tool player. You hear that kind of stuff. Now, 5-tool players are great. There's a lot of guys that don't wind up making it that are 5-tool players. They just don't reach that ceiling. But I would compare Josh to that. Like you see him, you see the size, you see the speed, you see the arm strength. You see the intangibles. I mean, it seems like a guy will run through a brick wall for his teammates. It just jumps out at you. And really, really cool to see the improvement in his game this past year. But, I mean, Bills fans and NFL fans and people around the country need to realize, like, guys like that don't walk through the door every day. And we're really lucky to have a guy with that skill set playing quarterback for the Buffalo Bills.
Can the things that they talk about that, you know, passing efficiency, accuracy, stuff like that. I mean, again, tapping into your knowledge, a coach, and you see a guy that, you know, he struggles with a certain area. Like, what's the key to unlocking that? What's the key to getting better? And do you have to just say, hey, he's never going to be like Josh Allen's never going to be Drew Brees, right? We know that, PJ. He's never going to be that type of guy. So what's the way right. to get him to maximize his at least his efficiency or to balance out the other things that he can do to make sure that those things don't hurt you in the long run?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, to compare it to baseball, like, I mean, guys have weaknesses and areas that need to get better. And you work at it and you work at it. But a big key is you need to still work on your strengths.
Right.
And things that Josh is really good at is his capability and throwing from broken pockets and making plays on the run. And you can't completely take that away from a guy because if he's continually just working on weakness, now that strength is a little bit less of a strength, if you know what I'm saying, Sal. And,
right.
You got to keep feeding the strengths. And I think that Brandon Bean and Coach McDermott, especially getting Diggs now, like putting so many athletes around this guy is promoting an athletic culture on the offense as a team. And I feel like they're going to out-athlete some people this year. I mean, they got so much speed and I think, and Coach Daboll obviously too does a really good job of putting Josh and his players in position to succeed, in my opinion. And I think he's going to continue to work. He seems like a guy that's really aware of his deficiencies. But at the same time, like when you're developing guys, like, yeah, we're going to work on the deficiencies, but just to bring it back, Sal, like you still got to feed those strengths and you still got to really fine tune the areas that make you a special player, if that makes sense.
It does. I remember when I was a student at Syracuse University, there were lots of Bills fans. It was during the Super Bowl run, but lots of Giants and Jets fans came from New York. You're right there in the middle of it. What's it like being around all those Giants and Jets fans, especially Jets and Sam Darnold being a Bills fan?
It's tough. Like we got some Jets fans in the house. I mean, they've had a similar plight that we've had the last, you know, couple decades. So it's nice to give some, you know, some ribbing back and forth here and there, especially with Darnold and Allen getting drafted in the same class, kind of trying to, you know, put money or take bets to see which guy's going to be better. And there's no love lost. And I try to not rub it in too much because I kind of believe in karma and superstition if you want, just because like, I know that anything can happen on any given day in any sport, but, it's been pretty neat. You know, as a fan to watch, you know, both teams obviously kind of rebuilding at the same time. I'm hardly unbiased, but I really believe that our rebuild and our roster right now is leaps and bounds better than theirs. And I can't wait to watch it.
And I also think they have much better leadership. I'm not a big fan of Adam Gase or, you know, what they're doing in New York. And obviously, as you know, being from where you're from and the organization you're with, how much leadership, you know, does matter and can translate. Let's wrap this up with a couple more quick questions here. First of all, I want to talk about, you know, what you're doing right now to stay busy. We all hope there's going to be football. We all hope there's going to be baseball. You have already, you know, seen a month of your season essentially canceled. Hopefully we can get these things in sooner rather than later. Nobody knows what the future holds, but how do you stay fresh mind and body? What is your daily routine like as far as staying in contact with players, coaches, things like that?
Yeah, we've done a pretty good job. I mean, this is obviously uncharted territory for everybody in all sports. I mean, you make do with what we got every single day. And we do a good job of communicating through Zoom conferences with the coaches, to continue talking about players and areas where they need to improve. And then as coaches, we do a good job of reaching out to our guys a couple times a week to make sure they still have facilities to work out in the weight room or facilities to hit in a cage or throw outside or somebody to play catch with, just things that, you know, you take for granted. So we do a really good job of staying on top of our players and making sure that they're able to get their work in through this time and staying sharp. So when the word does come down that we can start, that they're ready to go.
Yeah, well, let's hope that happens really, really soon, obviously. All right, last question before I let you out of here. PJ Pillitteri, assistant hitting coach for the Yankees, also a big Bills fan. What's the best baseball movie? What's your favorite baseball movie?
Oh, man, that's such a tough question. Probably Major League for me, the first one.
I think me too.
I probably shouldn't have been watching it as a kid, to be honest. But, you know, as you grow up, I mean, there's a lot of things in that movie that are similar to baseball, and it's funny at the same time. And Charlie Sheen actually had really good pitching mechanics. And it's a timeless movie for me. That anytime it's on TV, I'm going to stop and I'm going to watch it. So.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for doing this today. I really appreciate it. Obviously, say hi to your lovely wife, and hopefully we all get through this and we can watch the Yankees and everybody else playing baseball soon, PJ.
I hope so too, Sal. Thanks for having me, and stay safe. Go Bills.
Odyssey celebrates Labor Day. Brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best mobile network according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data 1H 2026.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.